The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
So, ABC, you and Brian Ross, I don't know exactly what you were thinking. On Friday, Brian Ross, who has been an investigative correspondent for ABC for almost 25 years, reported that during the 2016 presidential campaign, Donald Trump directed Michael Flynn to make contact with Russian officials before the election. The statement was incorrect. You know, something you don't say unless you have a lot of evidence to back it up. Yeah, that's the one thing Ross was a little short of, was evidence. By Friday night, Ross was on ABC World News Tonight reading a clarification. This time, he said Trump didn't ask Flynn to contact Russia until after he had been elected president. The problem with this is it affected the stock market on Friday, because that was kind of a big deal. And it wasn't really a clarification on World News Tonight. It was more of a, let me clarify by completely changing the report. On Saturday, ABC News apologized, saying they deeply regret the serious error and suspended Ross for 4 weeks without pay. 23-year-old veteran reporter. He knows better than this. Except he has a history of these kinds of errors. Do you remember the movie theater shooting in 2012 in Aurora, Colorado? You remember? He's the guy who reported that the shooter, we think, was a Tea Party leader. No, he wasn't. Naturally, President Trump gloated on Twitter about Ross's suspension, and the mainstream media can't stand President Trump. Despite the fact the president is wrong, mainstream media is not all fake news. But when will the media learn? If you want the president to stop yapping about fake news and how the media is out to get him, then you should probably stop with the sloppy reporting. This fake news feud between President Trump and the media lasted all weekend, and it's going to continue. I mean, are you tired of it? Because I'm sick of it. Fake news is now a cliche. It's a joke. It's part of our cultural lexicon now. In these insane times, when we're being flooded with media content, when it's difficult to know who and what to believe, shouldn't we be doing everything in our power, especially if you're one of the nation's major media organizations, to try to put aside politics for 2 minutes and refocus on integrity? Because character matters and the truth matters. In fact, I'm going to go on a limb and say the truth and character matters more than politics. Now, that's not going to get you a ratings point, and it's not going to sell a, you know, Make America Great Again for Christmas cap. But maybe we should all try to make character and truth our priority. And then maybe we'll be able to make journalism trustworthy again.
It's Monday, December 4th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, Stu.
Mr. Beck, how are you?
I'm really good. A lot of things to talk about today, but let's stick on the Donald Trump over the weekend, and let's start with the Ross story.
Yeah, that one's interesting in that because Ross has made some pretty big mistakes over the years, as you pointed out.
How is he still credible?
I mean, he's still their lead White House correspondent, right?
And he's an investigative reporter, and I mean, you know, I don't understand, you know, what you have to do to be fired. I mean, imagine Sean Hannity made a mistake like that. You think, and it affected the stock market. Do you think people would be calling for his, not suspension, but firing?
Yeah. Because the mistake, in case you didn't know the exact mistake, basically he said it was during the campaign, not the transition.
Right.
This contact with Russia. And I think everybody knows, and it's why so far what has come out of the Mueller thing is generally speaking underwhelming, no matter what side of this Correct. You're on, is that, you know, if Jared Kushner did direct the director of national intelligence to reach out to one of the main world players about a upcoming issue after Donald Trump was elected president and was just waiting to walk into the office, that is not a dramatic tale. I mean, there are questions about minor parts of it. You know, the old thing of you can only have one president at a time, so yes. You don't necessarily want that to be encouraged Correct. Constantly. And I understand that, and people, there is something to that at some level. On the other side of it is, that's not what this is about. From a sexiness standpoint, right, the only thing that's real is if it was Donald Trump trying to get help during the election from the Russians, which still to me seems like a long shot, but that's kind of what been the big...
See, here's the problem. Mm-hmm. We've never reached out to them. You know, we never talked to the ambassador. Oh, well, we shook hands. Well, then yeah. It was classified. And now it's like, no, we just passed him in the hallway. You know, all of the lies upon the lies. I mean, it really, if you look at this, and if it was just this isolated thing, you'd be like, okay, well, I'm not sure if that's that big of a deal.
Right.
However, it's the lies on top of lies on top of lies on top of lies. I mean, really, why would Flynn lie about this?
Right. Because the two things coming from
the White House
are, well, it wasn't a big deal. There was no problem with it. Why is he lying about it? And that's what this investigation is supposed to get done.
Right.
But it's a huge mistake on Brian Ross's part to essentially say, this was happening during the campaign and not the transition. The transition stuff might be an indication that leads to something else, right? If it happened during the campaign, it would be a massive development. And so he said that incorrectly. There is an interesting point in that.
Hang on just a second. I'm not willing to go where you just went, and I think we agree with each other. But no, he didn't say that incorrectly. He reported a falsehood.
Yes, because they we don't know for sure, but they said essentially they were a clarification, by the way, the entire gigantic story we broke is actually not that all that gigantic. Just a quick clarification right. on that. So these clarification, then they changed it to correction. What we don't know at this time is, did he get that information
from a source?
Did the source tell him it was during the campaign
Correct.
And then they corrected it? You'd think. Because the way they worded their one of their 19 statements about this was essentially it didn't go through the journalistic rigors that it should have. Meaning to me, it wasn't that he said it wrong, is that he just didn't check out the source enough to he didn't lock it down time frame wise with the source. The source said he was candidate because he wasn't president yet. Mm-hmm. Should have been president-elect is the way they should have referred to that. But in this case, it's a huge difference. It's a massive difference.
Market told us.
Yeah, I mean, it went down a few hundred points. It did bounce back mostly by the end of the day, but still there was.
It shows
if you sold at the end of that 350 point drop, you're not excited about that fact.
Yeah, and you also look at that and say that's how big of a story this would have been
yeah.
if he was right.
It would have
and,
been.
And, you know, once you saw that, oh, no, that wasn't happening, then you're like, oh, well, maybe he is going to be president.
Yeah. However,
I think, have you heard mm-hmm. the story? Do you remember the woman who came out and was talking to the press? She was a huge supporter of Donald Trump for a long time, loved him, was on The Apprentice, and really admired him and everything else. And she came out after the Billy Bush thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And she said, I don't want to say these things, but I have to tell you the truth. He brought me to the Beverly Hills Peninsula.
Yes, I do. Okay. This is one of the sexual assault accusations mm-hmm. at the okay. time. Yeah,
I believed her. I mean, she seemed like she really truly was a big Donald Trump fan for a long time. And she just seemed honest about being crushed by meeting one of her idols. And So I believed her. He came out, and remember, she just kind of went away. She wasn't a big deal. She just wanted to say it, and then she kind of went away. And then Donald Trump came out and called her a liar. Well, she sued. Do you know that tomorrow they are deciding in court whether or not the president can be deposed? Now, listen to this. The White House is saying the president is too busy to be deposed on something like this, and he will deal with it after his presidency. So they're asking the court to put it off until he's out of the Oval Office. Well, if you remember right, this sounds kind of familiar. That's exactly what happened when he was being deposed about Monica Lewinsky with Clinton. The White House said, you can't depose the president. He's too busy. He'll deal with this after he leaves the office. Well, the court had already ruled, no, you can depose the president on something like this. So if they rule tomorrow that the president does have to be deposed on this, this is going to open up a whole can of worms, because if he goes in and he tells the truth that, yes, I did do this, what does that mean? If he says no and there's evidence that exists that, yes, it did happen, then he's perjured himself and we're back with Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton again.
Yeah, but neither of those situations are going to happen, right? I mean,
he's, what do you mean?
Absolutely not going to say he did anything. There's, I mean, he's never in his life. He's saying his voice isn't the voice on the Billy Bush tape.
I know.
Like, there's no way he's going to say he did something. And the idea that there's going to be, but there's going to be evidence. Like, what evidence? Other than statements. And this is the world that we live in now. None of these.
Remember,
things.
This is the argument that we had under Bill Clinton. He'll never admit that he did it, and he didn't. He perjured himself. And when he perjured himself, they happen to have the blue dress. Does she happen to have anything?
If she had that,
I don't know.
Maybe
don't
not.
Know.
You think that if she had something like that, we would have known about it a long time ago. But maybe you're right. Maybe there's something there. We'll see. It's an interesting addition.
But I don't
to that.
Think it. I think it opens up not just for her, but for others. I think this will become like there's 8 women who accused, and he called all of them liars. And so this woman is leading it, saying, "I want my reputation back.
Yeah.
I did not lie." And she's had death threats and everything else. And so there's these 8 women. If they open the door for her, it may open the door for all of them. If anyone has any evidence, then you're getting your, then you are. I mean, Donald Trump said as soon as he leaves the Oval Office, he is suing them and he's going to take them to court for defamation of his character. It may
a circus. It's interesting, though, with from the media perspective. There's 2 sides of this, and they're both equally important. One, the idea how excited the media was when all of this stuff came down with Russia and Flynn and all of this. I mean, it was insanity. These people, they're celebrating, they're throwing parties. It's terrible for the country, right? Like, if the president did do these things and it gets caught, it's awful for the country. And what was the media doing? Celebrating. And people are so exuberant that they get over the top with their excitement. And I think that's why mistakes like the Brian Ross thing happen. They're so sure, they're so excited to get rid of this guy in any way possible that they make sloppy mistakes, or I think you could argue mistakes intentionally done to try to hurt the president and Republicans in general. But on the other side of that, and I think it's important to note, why, if this was just all fake news and these people were all the you know, the no character disasters that they're described as and is summarized by the president at times and Breitbart and all these other places, why on earth would ABC correct this report? It was an unnamed source. No one in the world would ever know that they got that fact wrong. If they were completely without character, they could easily say, well, no, it wasn't that source. The source that's coming out now publicly and telling you that I got it wrong? No, that was a different source. You didn't know about it. They had a million ways out of that story because they gave you no information. There was no reason for them to correct that report.
I want to be really careful on this. I don't think that there is... It's weird. I think there's meaningful change in the media, but it's not lasting change. And here's what I mean. I think there's meaningful change where they know they're up against their greatest foe. They also know they are being watched by the American public, and the American public doesn't trust them. Okay.
Right.
And so they are saying, okay, batten down the hatches, make sure it's right. It's kind of a Watergate thing, to where the Washington Post was looking at the, you know, at Woodward and Bernstein and saying, no, get another source. Okay. Mm-hmm. They know they're up against a huge foe. So get it right, because they have no credibility. With that being said, the minute Donald Trump is out and their side is in, they will go right back to ignoring all of this stuff. So there's meaningful change, just not lasting change. The new Wave mattress from Casper. Breakthrough in sleep technology. You're going to spend more time sleeping and less time tossing and turning. Casper collected 3 years of data, feedback, foam research from sleep science. Sleep science there's a lot going on right now. They took the last 3 years of the latest and greatest and said, how can we get people who are in constant pain, how can we get them to have a good night's sleep? They've developed a patent-pending support system that mirrors your body's natural curvature for a deeper and more restorative sleep. The new Wave. It has a top layer that's incredibly soft, doesn't get in the way of the support below. It is also designed with a breathable foam, which is their real hallmark, which lets you sleep cool year round. If you've ever had a foam mattress, oh my gosh, it's like sleeping in hell. Casper made that breakthrough to make sure that you're cool year round, but now they also gave you the Wave support system underneath all of that softness that will help you sleep through the night and wake up refreshed and with less pain. Try it yourself in your own home for 100 nights. Don't take my word for it. They want you to have it delivered to your house. They will give you free home delivery, free setup. All you do is you go to Casper.com, use the promo code Beck. You could save $50 on your purchase by using the promo code Beck. If you don't like it after 100 nights, you call them up. They come back. They pick it up. They ship it back. It's not a problem. Try it out for yourself. Casper.com, promo code Beck. Minimum purchases required. See site for details. Terms and conditions do apply.
Glenn Beck.
So Feinstein came out with a statement that's pretty bold, that they're building an impeachment case now. Listen to what she said over the weekend.
The Judiciary Committee has an investigation going as well, and it involves obstruction of justice. I see it in the hyperphonetic attitude of the White House, the comments every day, the continual tweets, and I see it most importantly in what happened with the firing of Director Comey. And it is my belief that that is directly because he did not agree to lift the cloud of the Russia investigation. That's obstruction of justice.
Yeah, so
I don't know. I mean, it's like, it's hard to impeach someone off of Twitter for their tweets. You're going to impeach him out of the White House for his tweets? I mean, I don't know.
I just think here's what's going to happen. It depends on what happens tomorrow. My theory is that this case with the women is going to be, Bill said this on Friday, that's going to be their next approach. And I think that's true because of this case. If this case is allowed to go through tomorrow, I think it's going to change all of the dynamics. And I think you're going to get to the next year or so where the president is just going to say, at the end of my term, I'm not going to run again. I think that's what's going to happen. I don't know if he's going to be impeached. If they find more with this investigation, if it ends today where we have it with Flynn doing, there's nothing's going to come of it. If they have more and Flynn is leading them to something and has real evidence, then you're going to have an issue on impeachment. But I think this is just going to mount so much that I think he's just going to say, you know what, I'm going back to my life. Let somebody else do it. I think that's what's going to happen.
It's certainly possible, though the president cannot obstruct justice.
No.
Just so you know.
No.
That's their
name. Really needs new lawyers. He really does. I mean, I don't know where he's getting these, you know, strip mall lawyers, but they're misinforming him.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Interesting weekend for Bitcoin. It went from 12,000 to a low of 10.6. Do you know why? This is actually something you should watch. Do you know why it had such a big blip? It lost $1,000 that fast. You know why?
I don't know why, no.
Telegraph reported right about the time of the big drop in the UK that they are now, the UK is going to launch a crackdown on the virtual currency Bitcoin amid growing concern it's being used to launder money and dodge tax. So now you have England saying, we're going to look into this. We might start regulation. So it went down almost 2,000 points. And then by the end of the day, it had bounced back up. What is it now?
11,300.
11,300.
That's
okay.
It.
Mm. All right.
What a disappointment.
Now,
only up from 800 in January.
Yeah, no, a lot of people say that Bitcoin is in a bubble, and you could make the case, and a pretty strong case, that it's in a bubble.
Mm-hmm.
One that I haven't been willing to really look at because, you know, this time it's different.
This time it's different. This it's never going to stop. It's always going to be like this.
Right. It's never different. However, I think I have the evidence that makes me say we are definitely in a bubble. Here it is. Launched just a few days ago, CryptoKitties. CryptoKitties, essentially like a digital version of Pokemon cards, but based on the Ethereum blockchain, is becoming one of the biggest viral sensations to catch on in the tech world. Built by a Vancouver and San Francisco-based design studio, people are spending a crazy amount of real money on the game. So far, about $1.3 million has been transacted, with multiple kittens selling for 50 ethereal coins, and the genius kitten being sold for a record of $246,000. That's $113,000. So here's what it is. I think there are only a certain number of virtual kitties that are born.
And you mean when you say kitty, like you mean cats, like little cats,
little digital cats. Okay, just a digital cat, and they're born through the blockchain.
Good.
Okay. So you buy a cat that is a digital blockchain cat,
mm-hmm.
And then you can interact with the digital cat. Let's see if what it says that you do. I know the idea is to trade. It's like Beanie Babies, to trade and to buy, you know, a better cat that doesn't exist.
Okay, so it's a bubble. Okay, we can now.
It's definitely a bubble. What you do is you collect cats, and here are the cats right here. How to play? Okay, there are the cats.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
So they all look pretty much the same. Mm-hmm.
They're very different. They're very different. Game was seeded with 100 founder kitties.
Okay.
This there's also a new Gen Zero cat released every 15 minutes, which are listed for the average price of the last five sold plus 50%. But the sale price declines over 24 hours until somebody actually buys the cat. Anyone can sell their kittens via an auction where they pick a starting price and an ending price, and the price declines over time until someone buys the cat. So, for example, I could put a kitten up for sale for a one-day auction at one ethereal coin. Is it
Ether or Ethereum?
Yeah, Ethereum coin. Mm-hmm. starting at one and a ending price of zero. And if somebody buys it 12 hours after the auction starts, they pay me 0.5 Ethereum,
which
coins.
Is like a couple $100.
You can also create new kittens by breeding them.
Okay. So blockchain sex, basically, is what's happening?
No, blockchain cartoon kitty sex.
Okay.
Okay.
That's much more
so
important.
So you are taking money that has no real value because it doesn't actually exist. You're buying that bogus money, and you're trading that bogus money for a bogus cat that doesn't exist. And your hope is that you're going to sell that fake cat or breed a better fake cat and sell it for more of the fake coins than anybody else.
Obviously. Did you feel the need to explain that to the audience?
No, okay. No, I mean, I was just talking down to a couple of the slow people that don't really understand that. Yes, indeed, perhaps this is a bubble.
It's funny you brought up Beanie Babies, which people talk about in this bubble way. That's such a fascinating story. I did an interview with a guy who wrote a book about it. I think it's called The Great Beanie Baby Bubble. And you think, well, it's kind of a silly topic. It's a fascinating story, though. This guy was going around trying. He's a real big entrepreneur and decided to try to do this, create these little animals that he would sell and make money off of. And really the reason why the Beanie Baby thing was so big for that time, mm-hmm. was that he decided to call these things, instead of just discontinuing them, he started calling them retired.
Ah.
And when he started saying retired, as soon as he said, we're about to retire this stupid Beanie Baby, people would rush to stores and bid the price super high. And so the whole time, the entire process was people trying to figure out who would next be retired, because as soon as they got retired, the price would go up. And the people buying the new ones,
so stupid,
were based basically on the idea that eventually there would be a retirement and they'd be able to cash in. And what the guy who wound up doing it was obsessed with these things, meticulous to the point of he would spend hours looking over samples of the eyes. And like, he was like, it took it super seriously and just designed like every one of these things. And he wound up making like $2 billion off of this.
So how many people have parents who collected the Beanie Babies, and they have a closet full of the Beanie Babies, and you knew at the time Beanie Babies aren't gonna work.
Yes.
You're not gonna retire on the Beanie Baby money. And they save them and they have them. Now is the time where boys are boys and men arrive. The men say, the hell, my Beanie Baby collection isn't going to be worth something. I'm keeping it. Because everybody's looking at their Beanie Baby collection now going, this is so stupid. Get rid of it. Once everybody gets rid of it, those who saved those Beanie Babies.
And you carry that dream to your grave, don't you?
Yeah, I'm going
to
lock them all in my coffin with me.
It's funny. Who knows what happens with this? I mean, it could cryptocurrency could have parts of that. There is more technology involved in it than Beanie Babies, so you think it might have a little bit more...
The kitties?
Yeah, well...
No, the kitties. Dear God, don't try to... Stu, don't try to talk yourself into the kitties at value.
No, I'm not talking. I'm talking about. I'm taking this technology.
Oh, the blockchain has. Yeah, the blockchain kitties don't have any value. But
well, I mean,
blockchain.
Everything has the value the market assigns to it, right? So, I mean,
that is crazy.
You just gotta wait for the right buyer, and usually it's a moron.
So I actually started reading a book about the tulip thing.
Yeah.
And it actually makes more sense, you know, because you think for instance, tell me this tulip story that you know.
The tulip story is there became this sort of irrational exuberance, is a phrase they often use in these terms, where they people believed that they were going to be they were super valuable, and they started trading them as currency. And
so why did it? Why? What was the spark for it? Why did it? What happened? How is it possible?
It's been a while. I don't remember.
Okay. So right. I never heard it. And I, okay. So here's the thing. This was at the time when people were just starting to keep gardens and starting to have lawns and everything else. Mm-hmm. And the really, really rich people were starting to do that. The bulb, I don't know where the tulip bulb came from. I'm not deep in the book. I'm kind of scanning it. Mm-hmm. But the idea that all of a sudden a thing of beauty, it's looked at as art. This one bulb is art. Okay. So mm-hmm. you could put this in your house, or you could put this in front of your house or whatever. And it's a thing of beauty and a thing of art. So it's like the art craze, to where a painting that you're like, okay, that doesn't even look like anything. That's just a blue canvas. No, it's worth $121 million. Okay. Well, good for you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Same thing. They thought this is a thing of beauty and a thing of art, and there's only one of them. And so they thought this is going to catch on, because all of the rich people are going to want these all in their gardens all over the world, which they did. It just didn't work out as well as they thought, because you can make more of them.
You can make more tulips?
Yes.
You can. My gosh. Yeah. There's inflation in the tulip market.
Yeah. Yeah.
It does seem that way.
Right. But you could see how people like Bitcoin, you could see how people could go, well, now, wait a minute. Hang on. You know, there weren't a lot of tulips. We think now tulips, I mean, they're everywhere. Not a lot of tulips. And they're making new tulips, and they're kind of, I don't know how you breed tulips, but they're making new ones. And they're like, oh, you know what? People are starting, you know, people are going to have these things called lawns, and they're going to want a flower box. It was at the beginning of flower boxes and bringing flowers in. I mean,
right.
You don't really even think of it like that, you know?
Yeah. It's a bit of a stretch.
No, that's why it was a bubble and a disaster.
Okay.
But again, you could kind of, like, I can't make a case for the kitty cats. Can't.
Well, I mean,
no.
We've had many.
Can't.
This is the pet rock, right?
Who spent? No. No, the pet rock costs what? $2?
But
people
are
spending $150,000 on a kid.
But the same thing with Beanie Babies, and the same thing with every one of these trends. You can always say, a Cabbage Patch doll, that's just a doll. I mean, you could always say that, right? It's about what level of entertainment and enjoyment it gives the individual. That's why things happen on a market. There's a lot of stuff that's worth, I mean, I see, you know, purses that my wife buys, and I think, that looks like
again,
it's worth $12,
again,
and it's not.
Again, not at all.
No.
Again, that is a thing that is tangible.
Yeah, but
that
tangible
is a thing that goes with style.
But that is something, that's a weird, that's an old-timey observation, right? Like, we used to say the same thing, like, that company, they don't even produce anything. That's what we used to say when the quote-unquote internet bubble happened, and now I'm pretty sure that one wound up being kind of big, that internet thing.
All right, I'm ready to buy an Ethereum cat.
I already have 12, they're for sale right now on auction.
Yes, but I have the genius kitty. Your mortgage rate depends on many factors: the economy, the loan that you choose, how many points you pay, other variables that can add cost, the property type, whether it's your primary property. This is the reason why it's in your best interest as a home buyer to seek a mortgage pre-approval and guidance before making an offer on a home. Plus, if you're a veteran and you haven't used your VA benefits, with interest rates this low, now is the time to get into a new home or to refinance. A great way to get started is by talking to the salary-based mortgage experts at American Financing. With American Financing, you get a straightforward and effortless mortgage experience. So call them now. American Financing, 800-906-2440. That's 800-906-2440, or online at AmericanFinancing.net. That's AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck.
Glenn Beck.
I mean, you know, I don't want to gang up on Detroit, but man, what a depressing thing, you know, to try to bring the Silver Dome down. Everything is crumbling. Nothing is working right. And you're like, okay, let's get rid of this eyesore. Let's bring this thing down. You try to blow it up and it won't come down. That's, I mean, I feel bad for Detroit. It's like, come on, man. We're the Charlie Brown of cities.
And many Lions fans were pointing out that the Silver Dome has survived many previous implosions as well. you can't just bring it down with one of those. It is a kind of a depressing thing, though. Basically, every building in the city is crumbling to the ground, and
you know, but
this one they actually want.
They say that
the
Detroit
ground.
Is actually becoming one of the more dynamic cities in the country. I think it may have a renaissance. It may have a renaissance.
It may. I mean, there's certain, you know, you have those. There's certain really wealthy benefactors who have decided, like, I love this city and I'm staying.
Like
here.
I love Shinola. What Shinola is doing. You know, are you familiar with Shinola?
Oh my, of course.
No,
obviously.
You're not.
No, I'm not.
Oh, look up Shinola. They're fantastic. They make these incredible bikes. They make incredible watches. And they started and said, we're going to build a great company that builds really great items, and we're going to build them in Detroit. And so they did, and they've taken off, and I mean, really high quality stuff, really good stuff. Never heard of Shinola, really?
Yeah, no.
They're one of the first companies to go into Detroit, and they've kind of kicked off a renaissance in Detroit.
There's another, I can't remember which guy he was, a billionaire from some line of business, and decided, you know what, I'm just going to go back, and I'm going to start building these amazing developments, and I just love the city, yeah. And I want to keep doing it. And he's just being vilified in the community because he's tearing down what Detroit has always been, and he's
a
trying.
Crap heat?
Apparently, people are like, there's some people. This is what happens every time.
They're tearing down all the crack right. houses.
Like, that's what they do. And they say this in New York all the time. Someone will build a really nice, apartment complex in a downtrodden community, and they'll say, well, now you're pricing out all the residents. And it's like, well, first of all, it's not their responsibility to set price for the entire community. They're doing something that's improving the community, right? And then they get beaten up for it. It's just a no-win situation. It's just why you just stay home and play video games and suck all of it.
Wait, hold it. That went south fast.
Glenn Beck. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
While you were sleeping in the early morning hours of Saturday, the Senate passed the final version of its tax bill. Senate voted 51-49 with Senator Bob Corker as the lone Republican voting against it. The big takeaway from the bill is the plan will reduce the corporate tax rate from 35% to 20%. That is huge. That is, if that actually goes through and happens, if Trump signs this into law, you're going to see, you'll see a boom to the economy. Now, Trump apparently is already walking away from the 20% after the bill passed. He told reporters, you know, it could be 22 when it all comes out, but it could also be 20. We'll see. The difference between the two percentage points, $200 billion. The passage of the Senate tax bill is a step in the right direction for the most part, but the House and the Senate still have to hash out the differences in their plans, and I have no idea what the final version is going to be right now, but cutting the corporate tax rate is good. I wish he was giving money to, you know, everyday people as well. It's the hasty way Congress is dealing with bills now. It kind of stinks of the Obama era politics, passing bills in the cover of darkness and at 2 a.m. on a Saturday. And only after the details of the plan are kind of released in a shady sort of way, you're kind of like, I don't even know what they're voting on. The Republicans are desperately trying to comply with Trump's demand to sign anything of substance by the end of the year. Not a good reason to pass a bill, but I'm hoping the bill will be good for the country. But one thing is for sure, unless we do something about it, Congress will continue to act as if we're all asleep.
It's Monday, December 4th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So I read a story in The Guardian Do you trust The Guardian? You think The Guardian is any good?
No. I don't trust anybody.
Do you trust anybody?
Not really. Very few people. You have a board behind you. As I sit here in the studio, I look behind you to a giant chalkboard.
Yeah.
And on that chalkboard is a giant timeline of the past 2 months.
Just two months, which
contains approximately 40, 45 people who have been accused of sexual harassment, assault, rape, you know, name the sexual crime. And some of them on there, some of them you'd predict, right? Harvey Weinstein, you kind of, kind of the guy who started this all off this
George,
run.
George H.W. Bush, never would have seen that coming. I would have put him in the safe category.
Absolutely.
My dying breath, I would have.
Yeah, George H.W. Bush, I mean, I would not have seen
that coming. No, would not have seen that one coming.
You've got NPR hosts, politicians, you've got...
Everybody.
Star Trek actors and,
Charlie Rose.
Yeah.
Charlie Rose and Garrison Keillor would have put them in the safe category.
Keillor's so weird looking, though. I feel like there's something.
So you're saying that there's only way.
I think there is.
The only way he can.
I know. It's not even that. It's just there's a look, right? There is a look.
No, there's a look of the guy who is the photograph, the photographer. It's under October 23rd. The photographer released on the same day that George Bush's, harassment comes out. This is a photographer who is taking pictures of models. You look at him and you're like, okay, yeah.
right.
Grab the kids and start running, okay? I mean, he just looks like, if he moves in next door, you are having a conversation with your kids. Don't go to the child molester's house. he's got that look.
Well, there's these industries, these sort of side industries to the like mainstream entertainment that are now all getting hit with this. I mean, the photographer thing is there's going to be a huge reckoning there, right? Because I mean, it's a bunch of guys taking pictures of like 19-year-olds who are half naked or all naked. Like that business, there's got to be all sorts of stones turned over there.
What's happening? The real gold mine here, I think, is Congress. I think we should have a trading floor. Mm-hmm. I think we should have a futures. Who do you think is next? When are they gonna get it? Because especially in Washington,
I like this because the guilt by accusation hasn't gone far enough. We're just going to start putting people who haven't even been accused on the board.
Yeah, we're just going to start trading that. Yeah, they've got something to hide.
That's good. That's helpful to the nation, yeah. I think that's a good idea.
Well, I mean, if we're wrong, then we lose because we would put our money behind, get on the trading floor, you have to buy in. So you're like, I'm going to put my $10 on this guy.
Well, it was interesting because it was a DARPA that did something a long time ago. They tried to come up with a market that would basically predict terrible events, right?
It
like terrorist attacks.
Yeah.
And the thought was people would get involved in this and like people who knew that a terrorist attack was coming would start to bid up certain prices. They would to make money off of it.
Yeah,
and
it wasn't. It wasn't, right? It wasn't that they knew a terrorist attack was coming. It was made for the investigative bodies and the think tanks around the world that were trying to figure out terrorism. And so like the CIA and MI6, they could all be a part of this trading floor. And they would say, you know what? We want to put so much points. There was no money exchange. We want to put so many points on an airplane, Middle East, these guys. And the theory was, as you would see the other agencies around the world, they would start to have, I got a bid in peace. That kind of makes sense with that one. So I'm gonna say yes to that one, and it would shake out, and it would be a pool of collective knowledge without actually sharing any of the collective knowledge. It would just be, we're watching something over here that kind of goes with that. And I think, I mean, DARPA was right,
and they were hit. Like, oh, how dare you? You're betting on terrorism. This is a terrible.
Yeah, like it was a great idea.
It's something certainly worth exploring because markets are efficient and they usually can help solve problems.
And that's why I think we need to start our trading floor for sexual harassers.
Because then, if you let's say you had an accusation you knew was coming out, right? Like you could
or if everybody knew, okay, this guy in Congress. Mm-hmm. I mean, Imagine you go to the people in Congress and say, hey, you can make some money here. You just have to bet on which one of your colleagues is next. These weasels would be, they'd be like, oh my gosh, this guy's so dirty.
Especially like the actors who haven't had a hit show in a while. Like, I got nothing going on, but I do know that guy, you know, I know Kevin Spacey's been doing all sorts of shady stuff. I'm going to put some money on him.
Yeah.
I think we could predict this
pretty
well.
So I don't think that we actually go to the people who know. I just think we do it ourselves, just by the way they look. I mean, let's make this a little more
creepy. Okay.
Yeah. Let's make this a little more like a witch hunt. Okay. You know, it's not bad enough that you don't have to have any evidence. You just have to say it. But we're going to base it just on what we think by the way you look.
That's efficient. I like that.
Right.
Yeah. Because I mean,
but I can't think of anybody that I would put in the no way category. Who would you put in the no way category? After George H.W. Bush, who would you put in the no way category? Mike Lee. I would put Mike Lee in the no way category.
I'd be comfortable with that.
Beyond him.
It's very few. I mean, we know the Cruz family with his multiple affairs and assassination of JFK.
Just the assassination runs deep in that family.
Who knows what's going on there?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There's really, you're right. I don't think you could, at this point, you just...
Nobody.
Yeah, and especially because we don't even know if these people did this, right? There's 40 some odd names behind you on the chalkboard, but in reality, there's very few of them we know actually did the thing they were accused of. There's a few of them that have kind of admitted it or, talked about it publicly, and some crimes are worse than others on that board, but still, like...
But if you look, those 40 names came out over the last 2 months. It's like every 2 or 3 days.
Oh, it's and over the weekend, like this is what I was kind of getting to before. There was a music conductor,
a playwright
or something like that. Like it's all these like now sort of side industries that people.
Yeah,
that
now
I don't
it's
know.
Like ah, like I was a music conductor. I was paying attention to. What kind of power does he have?
I was at the South Bend Arby's and I was working as a fry cook and right. I was like, now we're getting to that point, right. But still, and you know, it does seem like this is a never ending thing. And I think it's probably the correct observation that this is what they're going to go after Trump on once this settles down a little bit. They're going to try to bring back those accusations. They're going to try to.
Absolutely. It's going to start tomorrow.
I think the higher the stakes, the less it feels real. Like I think a lot of people, even if like the more thing was if
not
if
higher was, the stakes, the more political
it feels less real. Like
yes.
With Donald Trump, like there's a lot of things I've critical about Trump on, but like you look at the accusations of the harassment, there is a part of me that saw that and was just like, he's running for president of the United States. Of course he's being accused of a million different things. It's hard. Once you get to that point, you get some level of immunity almost, I think, from people who just say, there's so much at stake here. There's so much to motivate someone to say something like this that you kind of say, well, I don't know. I can't judge their heart. I can't judge this unless I have actual evidence. Now, of course, that's how you're supposed to judge all of these.
I know.
I thought it might be important time to point that out. You're supposed to have evidence on all of them.
So I don't know if you saw this from The Guardian. It's why I started with, who do you trust? The Guardian says, why did Roy Moore escape to Australia? Clues remain in the outback wilderness.
Okay. He escaped to the outback wilderness?
Yes, yes. Okay, so...
I don't know this story.
Right.
Roy Moore, the Senate candidate from Alabama, escaped to the Australian wilderness.
Yes. So in 1984, Moore spent the better part of a year in Queensland outback, where he lived and worked with the Rolfe family, the hardworking, deeply religious former owners of Telamon. But how he ended up there and what drove him, an ambitious 37-year-old assistant district attorney, to this remote outpost has mostly remained a mystery. Mm. The Guardian spent a week in central Queensland seeking out those who knew Moore to find out what was he doing there so far from home. What emerged was a portrait of a man overcoming his own personal demons, but one who never left the impression on those he met as anything but a gentleman. So it goes into all this mystery. What was he doing there? And then you start to, they start interviewing people. Well, I don't know. It was pretty normal for us.
Yeah, but he's doing it in Australia.
Huh? Yeah. I don't think he'd ever done any sort of manual labor in his life, but he took to the hard labor like a duck to water. He was a hard-working man. One woman, who is 16 years old when Moore lived with the Rolfs, came close contact with him, said, "I never felt uncomfortable around him. Maybe he was trying to get away from something. There was nothing of that kind on my part. I didn't feel uneasy with him at all. There was never anything even remotely like that. And I was in my teenage years. That would have been prime time if he was going to do something. Usually you'll have your antenna out for something like that. But I remember him being gregarious, bubbly, loud, you know, a typical American. I do remember that he sucked at tennis." Another said, "I never thought of him anything other than a good bloke." Another woman said, "Certainly there weren't any alarm bells or anything. He just seemed like a very pleasant man. That's all I can recall." Another one said,
"Wow."
Another one said, "He was a man. I remember him as a man with deep religious belief and a gentle man with a beautiful singing voice." It's interesting. Roy is a person who's a little bit set in his beliefs, and he doesn't like change. So when he has an idea about something, it's black and white. He doesn't see it in gray. I couldn't say whether the allegations may be correct or not, but I find him very surprising because of his treatment of us and the family and all the women who were with us. He was very morally correct. I mean, it's possible people have a second side outside of moral company, but we never saw it.
So basically, the Guardian went to Australia to find dirt, and what they found is a bunch of people who said, actually, he was very nice, but he was not good at tennis.
Right, right.
So,
what was he doing? Why was he so afraid of tennis? I did find it interesting that the Guardian actually published it, though. Instead of saying there's not a story there, they just wrote a fancy headline to get you to think that there was something there. And then when you read it, I mean, from the beginning, like there was nothing.
You read quotes from like paragraph 8. There's been 4 people in the history of the internet that have made it to paragraph 8.
Yes.
They all needed the headline.
But it wasn't on page 16. It was also on page 16 and page 1. No matter who you're shopping for this holiday season, Sherry's Berries has the perfect gift for everybody on your list. I got a note. Berries are in Glenn's freezer. I don't even know I had a freezer, but where the hell is my freezer? Where is the freezer? I want the Sherry's Berries before they're gone. This holiday, you can get fresh, delicious Sherry's Berries. They are so good. They start at $19.99 plus shipping and handling. I don't know if you've ever had, the basket of fruit flower things?
Yeah, yeah.
Those suck. Do you think so?
Yeah. I mean, they're not.
They suck.
I know what you mean, yeah.
They suck. And it's usually because it's like bad fruit. It starts with bad fruit.
Yeah, but if you have bad fruit and then you just cover it in chocolate, you can't tell.
Chocolate covered bad fruit.
Right, but it's harder to tell. I think that's right.
Yes.
That's the
theory
there.
You can't spot it. You only spot it once you bite into it. So you're like, wow, that looks great. And then you eat a bite and you're like, okay, I'm not going to have any more of that.
Right. That's why, of course, Sherry's berries is the answer.
Yes. Yeah. Sherry's Berries. You can double the berries for $10 more. Your gift will include a free keepsake dessert platter. It's 2 gifts in one. Sherry's Berries, more than just berries. They have snowman brownie pops, cheesecake Christmas trees, chocolate truffles. I mean, they have such good stuff there. If you're looking to send somebody a gift, do this. Customer satisfaction, number one, Sherry's Berries, signature gift box, no wrapping required. How long does it take to find my freezer? $19.99. Go to berries.com. That's berries.com. Berries.com. Click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Enter my name, Glenn, G-L-E-N-N, at checkout, and you'll get a special discount. Remember, double the berries for $10 more. It's berries.com, promo code Glenn.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Very excited to talk to an author. His name is A.G. Riddle. He's the author of Pandemic, and I'm trying to remember the name of his new one. I think it's Departure. I found him about 10 days ago, and I've read all five of his novels in the last 10 days or 12 days. I'm interested in the topic that he talks about. He's kind of a sci-fi action writer. He's a guy from Silicon Valley who did some startups and now is writing about, you know, quantum computing, and he's fascinated with the evolution of man. And I just find his work really compelling. And I don't know if anybody, did you even know? We should check out. Is he like famous or anything? Or is this a, I know nothing about him. He's going to be on with us because I think you should meet him. And if you're looking for a good book to read, any of his books are great, especially if you're into futuristic, the paradox that we are beginning to go into. His latest is Departure, and it's about time travel and quantum computing and what is in store for us in the future. And it's really good. It's really good.
It's an entertaining way to talk about the, yes, nerd culture you're obsessed with.
Yes,
basically.
I started because I was looking for. I'm reading all kinds of science and tech books right now, and I'm looking for who's telling this in an interesting way. I find, you know, we kind of did this with people like Brad Thor, and, you know, became friends with
Vince Flynn,
yep, because at the time they were looking at entertaining ways to tell people what we're really fighting.
You know, terrorism and right, and all of that, international intrigue.
Right. And so I'm looking now for some entertaining ways to talk to people about what we should be thinking about, the things that should be crossing our mind. And, you know, you hear about Stephen Hawking said, he just reiterated it again this weekend, that he believes the human race will be finished, that Homo sapiens will be done by 2050, that we'll be out. And I think
time we're put out of our misery, to be quite honest.
I know. I actually think that he may be right, but not in the way that everybody thinks, not the way that you just heard that sentence. There's something very logical to what he said, especially if you know history or if you're reading stuff like A.G. Riddle. I think he made that clear, and we'll talk about that top of next hour.
Glenn Beck. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So glad that you're here today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you had a good weekend. We have some good news about the Nazarene Fund. Tomorrow, we have Tim Ballard in. He is the CEO of Operation Underground Railroad, which is an amazing group of people that are going in and breaking up the slave trade for sex trafficking all around the world, and doing some amazing things here in the United States, but they can't talk about them here in the United States. We have partnered with them, with the Nazarene Fund. So now Tim is the official CEO of the Nazarene Fund. And the reason why we partnered with him is because I wanted to expand it. You know, we didn't know what we were doing August 2 years ago when I said, hey, let's raise $1 million and let's see if we can get, you know, 10 families out or 100 families out of the Middle East. Well, we did get 100 families out. In fact, we had almost 8,000 families, Christians, that had been marked for death by ISIS. We got about 8,000 of them out. We moved another, 6 or 10,000 to different parts of the Middle East, so they were safe from ISIS. I mean, it is truly one of the most remarkable stories, I think, in radio history or television history when it comes to a single audience. This single audience saved 8,000 marked for death Christians. We didn't know what we were doing at first, but we got to be pretty good at it. But then the mission kind of went into another direction as we were hearing from the families that we were moving. They said, you know, my sister and her daughters have been kidnapped and they're in the slave trade and they're being held by ISIS. So we started looking into that and we hired some people, former military, et cetera, to go in and rescue these people. We have raised to date now, or so sorry, we have freed 100 slaves in Iraq alone. And these are all women and children. The youngest one, the last one, was 3 years old. That is horrible. We've lost two operatives in a mission. We got the slaves out. They went back for more, and they both lost their lives. We need to bring in some, you know, some people who really know what they're doing. And that was Tim Ballard. And so Tim and Operation OUR and the Nazarene Fund have merged together. And we are going to take on the slave trade, but not only the slave trade in the Middle East and Northern Africa. But I can't get into a lot of details, there's organ trafficking going on now. And what they're doing is they're kidnapping these children that are Christians. Because remember, ISIS and people like them believe that, you know, you don't have a right to live. You're not really a person if you're a Christian. And so they take these kids and these families and they're harvesting them for organs. And it's horrific what is happening. And I have seen a video of one of them, and we haven't decided whether or not we're going to show it. It's disturbing. It's just disturbing. And we put operatives down on the ground. We know where this happened. It's not happening there now, but we have devised some ways to break up the organ harvesting as well and really get to the source of a lot of this. But we need your help. It's going to take a lot of people, and we have so many people from special forces from all around the world that want to do this. It just takes money to do it. So our goal for the year is to raise $25 million. That will free a lot of slaves, and it will change not only the Middle East, but it'll make a huge dent around the world. So we really could use your help and your support. I got an amazing handwritten letter in from an 8-year-old boy. I'll have to show it to you on TV tonight. This 8-year-old boy named Garand, he just wrote, "Please use this $8 to help the Christians in the Middle East." It warms our heart so much to see the kids participating in this. And we're working on some things to help teach your kids about what's really happening and the evil that is around the world, but to show them, you know, real life superheroes. You know, you don't have to go to comic books. There are real life superheroes that are saving people. And we would love to get your kids involved in this because they're going to be dealing with it in their lifetime as well. Good news is, just in the first few days of our fundraising, we've raised $250,000. So we're 1% there, but this is the first, it was like the first 4 days of this. And our goal is to raise $25 million in the next year. So by Christmas of next year, to be able to raise $25 million, we really need your help. You can go to thenazarenefund.org, thenazarenefund.org. So I don't know if you remember, do you remember Congressman Massey?
Not Massey. Massa?
Was it
Eric Massa?
Massa. Eric Massa. Yeah, that was his name.
Thomas Massey is a good
congressman. Yeah, good guy. You're right.
This is another.
This is Eric Massa. Okay, so Eric Massa was a guy. This is for if you're a longtime listener or viewer of the show. I was on Fox. The guy called in. He was a Democrat. And he said, I've got some dirt on the Democrats. I'm going to expose it all. And I want to talk to you. Okay. He called in during the show. Do you remember? And he said he had all kinds of information that he was going to expose. Well, give me some. Not until I'm on the show. Well, we knew that there was some scandal going on. We didn't know exactly what. We found out that it was all revolving around tickle fights. Do you remember the tickle fight guy? Yes. Here is play a cut one, please.
Somebody says I groped male staffers, female staffers. You know, I was fondling a cat, whatever it is. I don't resign. I stand up
and I say, you do.
No,
and here's why.
No, I don't.
Well, I do, and here's why. Because it doesn't make any difference what my intentions were. It's how it's perceived by the individual who receives that action.
That's the Franken-line.
And we set it up so that it could be completely...
Your name is at stake here.
And that...
No. Not just your name.
Everybody's name.
Your children's
name. That's right.
Okay? So there are some. There's something called honor. You are a Navy guy.
So the only other
honor.
Thing... Glenn, the only thing I do is slip my wrist and bleed out here on the... I'm telling you, I was wrong. I was wrong. It's why I've...
What you're saying to me is they took it wrong.
No, I'm saying my behavior was wrong. My behavior was wrong.
I should have
never allowed myself to be as familiar with my staff as I was. I never translated from my days in the Navy to being a congressman. Let me be very clear.
I don't know what tickle fights in the Navy. I've never been in the Navy.
Oh,
I don't know what tickle fights in the Navy.
Let me show you some.
You're going to show me tickle fights?
I'm going to show you a lot more than tickle fights.
Whoa. Okay. So he just went on to this. This tickle fight was normal. I finally had enough. Cut two, please.
But I cannot put it together in my head. You believe these things. You're trying to convince me you believe these things.
Yep, and I can't change
it.
Do you realize, as a member of Congress?
Bullcrap.
I can't, especially...
Bullcrap,
no,
sir.
No, it's not.
Listen
bullcrap.
To me.
Here's
do
why.
Do you realize when... what some of us... Do you realize what some of us are doing? We're not in elected office. Do you realize my family is at stake? Excuse me, sir.
So is mine.
Excuse me for a second, sir. My family is at stake. You've got a little scandal with your children in college. I've got one for all time now because I'm not going to resign. I'm not going to back down. I have come to a place to where I believe at some point the system will destroy me. That's okay because I'm going to do what I can to pass on a better America for tomorrow. So I don't understand the white flag. It doesn't make sense to me.
For 30 years, I've been doing it. I can't fight this. I can't fight cancer. I can't fight the White House. I can't fight the Democratic Party. I can't fight the Republicans. I can't fight anymore.
Okay. So he was trying to make himself look like a hero. But here's what happened. This came out now on Friday. Here's the real story. So Massa, my apologies to Massey. Massa, he calls us and says, I'm going to expose Harry Reid. I'm going to expose the party. And we know he is in trouble for tickle fights. So we say, well, what do you have? But I'm going to expose it. Then we know that about 4 o'clock, about an hour before the show on Fox, the social media changes. And all of a sudden, people in the Democratic Party are starting to rally around him. He comes on the show and he says, OK, so I'm not going to tell you what I told you. This is what I really want to say. I was wrong. Didn't make any sense. Did you make a deal with Harry Reid? Did you make a deal of some sort? No. What came out Friday was when they're looking through the records on who paid out. Did the parties pay for any sexual harassment lawsuits? Yeah. On that day, the day of the broadcast, it looks like the Democrats decided to pay to cover his butt. So My guess is the deal came down. He used me as a wedge to get a deal, which is what we suspected. But now we know a deal was made, and people who were crying sexual harassment about him were paid off by the Democratic Party. That is what happened. And now you know the rest of the story. Getting a good night's sleep is easier said than done, especially, you know, if you hear a noise downstairs. You can stop worrying about all of that. You can rest easy now, knowing that your home and your family are protected with Simply Safe. Every Simply Safe system is a complete arsenal. If you order online, Simply Safe, you can order it within just a couple of minutes. You can have it on your doorstep tomorrow if you want it. You open up the box, you plug it in. It automatically starts to tell you what to do. You know, put these things here, put that here. And you don't need any tools. You don't need any hard wiring. Really, my 10-year-old son, when he was 10, he helped. I mean, it's really simple. Simply Safe. Plus, they make it simple because there's no contracts or no hidden fees. You own the system. And you can get the 24/7 professional monitoring for $14.99 a month. All you have to do is go to simplysafebeck.com. When you do, you'll get a 10% discount if you order today. That's simplysafebeck.com. Get a 10% discount at simplysafebeck.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
I have to make a book list for you. I've read some really good books lately. Great, great history book. A couple of them. Some really good. You haven't read Brett King's Augmented Life in the Smart Lane. You should. Really good. Reading some great novels. And I'll put a list together in case you want. In case you have book lovers, you know, on your Christmas list, I'll get you a book list. I asked Rafe last night if he would do one too. Rafe is my son, 13. He reads probably more than I do. And is just, he devours. I mean, literally if he starts in the morning and, you know, has kind of a normal day, he can finish a novel in a day. By nighttime, he's finished. So he just reads and reads and reads and reads. And I asked him if he would put together a list for, you know, 13-year-old boys, if you have a 13-year-old boy, because he reads pretty much everything. We're going to do that. We talked last night about reading The Immortal Nicholas, because we read every night before we go to bed. So we talked about reading The Immortal Nicholas as a family. And I think what we're going to do is we're going to make that just for subscribers only. On theblaze.com. It won't be on the TV network or anything else. It'll just be subscribers only. I got to figure out the technology to, you know, get it so it's really easy to just upload every night. But we'll read, probably starting this week, The Immortal Nicholas until Christmas.
And you're also helping teach him a lesson that eventually every good book just winds up being in video at some point, whether it's a movie or something else, so you don't really have to read it. Because reading's, you know,
no,
it takes
really,
a long time.
And no, I really...
Someone eventually will read it to you on the internet.
Yeah,
that's
no.
That's the lesson to learn, kids.
No.
At some point, or they'll make a movie out of
no,
it. One of the two.
No, I don't. Actually, I read... Let me see if I can find it here on my list. I read... Oh, it's... Love of Money, or I can't remember what it's called here. Let me see if I can find it. But it is the story of... the movie that is coming out, All the Money in the World. Some Disgustingly Rich or something like that.
They're running ads for that. That's the movie that Kevin Spacey was in, and they edited him out of it.
Yes.
And now Christopher Plummer is playing that role. First of all, the movie looks amazing.
I read the book that it's based on.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
About Getty.
Mm-hmm. And so it tells the whole, the movie is just really kind of one chapter of this book. But I read the book. I can't wait for the movie.
You know what I want to happen? Is about 2 days before it comes out, I don't care if it's true or not, come out and accuse Christopher Plummer of sexual harassment just to see if they try to edit somebody else in. I just see last minute, they're like, all right,
he's got a guy reading. Just got the guy reading line. I won't pay anything for my grandson. It's Painfully Rich is the name of the book by John Pearson. Painfully Rich. If you're into the Getty story, that's a wild ride. Wild ride.
Glenn Beck. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
It finally happened on Friday. Impeachment hopefuls and resistance warriors like Keith Olbermann have been waiting with bated breath for months, salivating over what secrets Mike Flynn might reveal. We found out Friday. Actually, we didn't find out anything on Friday, but we found out a little, I guess, maybe. Highly anticipated ruling against General Flynn was, wait for it, lying to the FBI. The Mueller hammer everybody was waiting for on the surface seemed a little underwhelming to some. The question is, what did General Flynn promise to the FBI to receive such a small slap on the wrist? If this investigation stops here and this is all they got nothing. I don't think that's the case. After millions of dollars and thousands of man hours invested, if all we get out of this is a lying general and a tax evading lobbyist, that's a pretty big letdown. Manafort and Flynn could very well, though, be act one of a complicated three act play. That's my guess. Who or what comes next is anyone's guess. But the hyperbolic media reports, the finger pointing, the impeachment calls, that's not helping. And those who say, it got nothing, the president is fine, that's not helpful either. The president defeating his defense after every single allegation really isn't the smartest, Mr. President. I don't know where you, I mean, it's like your attorneys are from H&R Block. Those are tax attorneys, man. They can't help you on this. Stop listening to your really crappy attorneys. So let's get back on track. The investigation better start producing fruit soon. And we all need to look at that fruit and start accepting that fruit no matter which way it goes. Russian interference is an undisputed fact. Putin is a threat. Russia is a threat. The entire intelligence community is in agreement on this. Russian intelligence services launched a campaign to publicly sway opinion via social media. They appear to be involved in the Fusion GPS dossier and a meeting at Trump Tower. More Trump administration officials could be involved, but so can the Democrats and the Clinton campaign and a laundry list of other Americans. This is a serious issue, and if we don't fix this now, imagine what might and probably will happen during the midterms and the 2020 election. If this was just the opening salvo of a much larger Russian influence operation, we're in serious trouble. The media needs to stop with the overreaction, and so do the supporters. Those calling for impeachment every time something comes out, they need to calm down. Those who've already made up their minds that he's guilty or not guilty will ultimately find themselves missing the actual threat. So to all the investigators, the FBI, the DOJ, and all other investigations that are open on this, do your jobs. Be thorough. Do it quickly. There is too much at stake here.
It's Monday, December 4th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So I did something after I was on holiday, and I had downloaded a whole bunch of books. And one of them, I think, was Pandemic. I think that's the first one that I read. And I've never done this. You know, at the end of the book, sometimes it says, hey, write to the author and tell me what you think. And so I did. And I just wrote, I said, hey, I just finished one of your books and I really enjoyed it. And he wrote me back right away and said, hey, thanks so much. I'd like to, you know, send you an autographed copy. And I'm like, oh, thanks. no recognition of who I was, or I don't even know now if he really knows who I am. So I said, I'm already into the second book and it's really great. Well, probably much to his surprise, I've read all of his books, because he is looking at a problem that I am really interested in. And he has some facts that he builds his fiction. And a lot of it is, I think I would classify it, I guess, as sci-fi in a way. He builds his fiction around some facts that I want to find out more about. So I want to introduce you to A.G. Riddle. He's the author of Pandemic, and also The Atlantis Gene. And I think the new one is called, what is it, A.G.?
It's Genome.
Genome. No. Departure. I thought that was the new one.
Well, Departure actually came out before Pandemic, so it's a standalone. But it may be the most recent book you've read. Which
okay,
is probably,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, they're all great. They're all great. So let me, first of all, thanks for coming on the program.
Oh, of course.
You really kind of look into a couple of things that interest me. You know, Stephen Hawking has said, he just said it again this weekend, that Homo sapiens are going to be a thing of the past by 2050. And people freak out and they think, oh, my gosh, we're going to be all wiped out. I don't think that's what he means. He means that Homo sapiens, as we know them, as we are now, are going to be so transformed that you won't be able to recognize the current Homo sapien next to the new Homo sapien of 2050. Does that make sense to you?
It does. And I mean, I think he's right in that I believe we're in the midst of this radical transformation that we're just now getting our heads around.
So in your book, you talk about something called the Great Leap. And I was only familiar with the Great Leap Forward of China, which was a nightmare. But you talk about the Great Leap. Can you describe that?
Sure. I mean, you know, one of the interests and one of the themes of my work is, you know, humanity's genetic history. And so what we now believe is that the current, you know, that our race of humans, the Homo sapiens, are about 200,000 years old. And so when we first evolved, you know, we know there were Neanderthals existed on Earth for maybe 200,000 or 300,000 years before us. And there were, you know, these humans called Denisovans and Homo florensis on the island of Java. So there were other human species. And so we coexisted with them for about roughly 150,000 years. And it was status quo. I mean, you know, life went on Earth as it had for, you know, a very, very long time. And then something happened about 50,000 years ago. And we see it, especially in Europe, this explosion of creativity. We see these cave paintings and sort of this advent of figurative art. And so making, you know, clay sculptures and these other things. And so we also see the advent of complex language. And so these are things that really had not existed on Earth before. I mean, there were species that Homo erectus had made tools and other sort of breakthrough, you know, we had learned to control fire, but no human species had ever done anything on this level cognitively. And so we call, you know, geneticists call this the Great Leap Forward. And so the only thing that we know for a fact is that after that, all the other human species went extinct. And so I think this coincides with the extinction of other archaic humans. And so I think they're, you know, to me, it feels like we're in another great leap forward.
Okay, before we go to the other great leap forward, let me just ask one thing. Because in your books, you kind of, and I don't know what's fact and what's fiction here. You allude to the fact that the other species were kind of killed by us for competition of meat. You know, we needed 20% more calories for our brains. And you know, they were bigger, stronger, but we were smarter. And so we kind of wiped them out. Is that true or is that speculation?
Well, it's still a matter of debate. I mean, what we do know for a fact is that when our species moved into an area, we see the archaeological record of other species stop. And so the big debate is, was that some sort of interbreeding with our species, or was it competition? You know, Neanderthals had existed in Europe for 500,000 years. They'd seen a lot of climate change. And so a lot of, you know, anthropologists say, hey, look, you know, we think that obviously the world was getting warmer at that point, and we think that created this ecological disaster that wiped out the Neanderthals. But to me, that doesn't hold a lot of water, because you got a species that's very long-lived. We show up on the scene, you know, the cognitive revolution happens at the same time, and these guys disappear. So,
okay. So the reason why I bring this up, and it may be where you're going, take us to the next great leap.
Well, I think, you know, to me, it's sort of like a ripple on the horizon. And, you know, in the late 90s, people said, oh, the internet is going to transform everything. You know, the retailers are going to go bust. And then it largely didn't materialize. You know, things went on the way they had for a long time. But now we're seeing this transformation of empty malls. You know, you walk into a restaurant, and now there's a touch screen to take your order instead of a person. I mean, the people are still there. Assembly lines need less people. So we're seeing, you know, this, call it a technological revolution of robotics and artificial intelligence. You know, robotics are doing a lot of the manual labor that we've traditionally done for, you know, since history began. And artificial intelligence threatens to frankly do a lot of our thinking for us. So, you know, part of the thing that I explore in my books is, you know, what becomes of the human race, and what does the future look like? And that's something I worry about.
Okay, so let me ask you this. As I have read yours, I'm also reading, you know, I read a lot of Rick Kurzweil, and I'm reading Brett King, his book called Augmented, which is all about, you know, what do we need to teach our children? What is on the horizon? And what do we teach our children? And one of the things that he talks about is that we have to be open-minded. We have to learn how to work with robotics and AI. And we have to really be open to accepting the changes that will be coming even to our own bodies and with nanotechnology, et cetera, et cetera. So as I'm putting all of these together, and then I read your Great Leap, I think to myself, okay, so what I believe Stephen Hawking is talking about, and Ray Kurzweil is the transhumanism. It's the singularity of bringing man and machine and making them one. If you do this and you have quantum computing and AI, an upgraded human is going to talk to a non-upgraded human, and it would be like talking to a dog. I mean, the information and the modeling that the individual could do who's upgraded that would be completely lost on a non-upgraded Homo sapien, it puts us in a different category. And so that was my first thought, was, okay, this is going to put us in a different category. You're not going to be able to relate. Then I started thinking, well, we're already talking about cars. You know, once automated cars are really everywhere, it's only a matter of time before we don't let humans drive anymore, because they're gonna screw it all up. Well, if you have a non-upgraded human and everybody else is upgraded, I'm not gonna let the human really touch anything, because it's like having your dog drive a bus. You don't do that. You can't do it. Then I read your book and I think of the Great Leap. Is it possible that the upgraded humans actually do wipe out the Homo sapien because we're dangerous to them?
Well, certainly. I mean, I think the long arc of human history has been, to a certain extent, replacement and sort of one dominant species. I mean, one of the things that fascinates me is the fact that there are no Neanderthals, but there are, you know, plenty of chimps and gorillas and bonobos. And these are, you know, obviously, whether you believe in evolution or not, you have to agree that genetically, you know, a chimpanzee is 99.8% the same genome as our species of human. And so it's like, you know, why did they survive and Neanderthals didn't? And I think it's very clear that chimpanzees were not a competitor for food with us, and to a certain extent they weren't a threat. And so the question for me becomes, all right, if we know the future is about a certain amount of merging of human with technology, I mean, you look on the street today and everyone walking around is staring at their cell phone, half the people driving are staring at their cell phone, and so it's whether it's been implanted or not, there is this sort of merging with technology that we know is somewhat inevitable. What does become the role for humans? And I do think there will be this, probably a minority of people that say, you know, I like life the way it is, and I'm not going to join this sort of future that humanity at large has envisioned. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I like to think that there's going to be coexistence and peace, but, you know, the long arc of human history hasn't really borne that out, but yeah. So we may be entering this new era.
A.G. Riddle, author of Genome, also that's a part of the Pandemic series, the Atlantis Plague and Departure. You can start really anywhere and pick him up and enjoy him. Great storytelling. Really, really great storytelling. I really enjoyed it. A.G., I'd love to talk to you again sometime. Thank you so much for all of your hard work.
Oh, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
You bet. Bye-bye. Name of the book, again, is Genome. It's part of the Pandemic series. I started with Pandemic, then went to Genome. I just read Departure, which he said was an earlier book, which I thought was really, really good, but doesn't have kind of some of the deeper stuff in it about the Great Leap. I mean, if you're at all curious about what the future holds and where do we come from and what's the next turn, he gives you some food for thought. It's all sci-fi, obviously, but it's quite good. A.G. Riddle is his name. In 2017, we witnessed numerous natural disasters, an increasing threat from North Korea, an alarming number of cyber attacks on financial data and hacks. Many Americans have felt, you know, maybe I should be a little more prepared than I was. Big disasters will strike. And when the big disasters come, there's not going to be any warning. It's not complicated to prepare. It used to be, but it's not. And it's not anymore because of a company called My Patriot Supply. When My Patriot Supply, when Matt Redhawk first started My Patriot Supply, he was a guy who just, you know, was a guy who was paying attention to the news and was like, I gotta get prepared. He starts to get prepared and he realizes most of the stuff that he's buying tastes like crap. It's MREs. It's not easy to store. It's just awful. He thought there's got to be a better way to do this. Now he's put everybody out of business. They are so good. The food is so good. The quality is so high and the price is so affordable. He's now offering 102 servings. It's a food kit for only $99. That is ship free to your house. It's breakfast, lunch, and dinner. 102 servings. And it's easy to store. It's easy to grab and go. And you can get it right now online at preparewithglenn.com or by calling 800-271-63, 800-271-63, or preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Stu and I are just having an interesting conversation off the air about, you know, why does this stuff matter?
Yeah, like, even if you figure out exactly what's going to happen in the future and think of some magical way to stop it or make it better, I mean, then you're probably going to be dead in like 3 days anyway. And no one's even going to know.
That's a very optimistic.
No, I'm.
Yeah. So, I mean, because I'm really concerned about technology. I'm both thrilled and excited about technology and very concerned because we're not thinking about the ethics that are coming our way. We're all distracted and it's just going to come barreling down on us.
our education system is not prepared to teach us what we need to learn. It's teaching us to live in a world of 1940. And what's coming is robotics and artificial intelligence and a completely different way of life. So, A, you're not going to stop it. None of this is going to be stopped. The genie's out of the bottle, so it's not stoppable. However, how do you live with it? Now, how do you prevent, you know, how do you warn about things that are really bad? How do you decide and prepare yourself before it's just here? So you're strong enough to not just fall in line with things that are maybe moving in the wrong direction. How do you teach your children to be prepared for the world of tomorrow? What should they even be doing? Go to college? Study what?
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
It's a really big week in the court system. Tomorrow, Donald Trump is going to court to try to fight a lawsuit. Remember the woman who was on The Apprentice, was a huge fan. Then she was out in California. He called her up and said, hey, why don't you come to my place at the peninsula and we'll talk. She went. She said that she was, you know, abused by him, and it was horrible because she was such a big fan. He called her a liar. She's now suing for defamation of character. And she said, I wasn't lying, and don't call me a liar. Now the White House tomorrow is going to be in court arguing that the president can't do depositions while he's the president because it will distract him from his other duties, et cetera, et cetera. It's not going to fly because it didn't fly with Bill Clinton. So if that happens, that's a big deal because it's going to open up an entirely new front on the president. And it will be I think that will be the story of 2018 for Donald Trump, that and Russia. But this one will probably be a faster knife. The other thing that is happening tomorrow in the court system is we're going to hear the gay wedding cake. The Supreme Court is going to hear this case. Welcome to the program, Pat Gray.
Thank you. This is the one from Colorado where a gay couple came in. And they asked this man, Mr. Phillips, for a wedding cake. And right away he said, you know, I'll bake anything for you. You can have brownies, pies. I'll sell you whatever you want. But I just can't be part of your wedding. That's my art. And it's a real personal thing for me. And I just feel like it violates my religious rights. And so they took him to court and they sued him. And of course, Colorado decided that if he doesn't do cakes for gay weddings, he can't do any cakes at all. That was their ruling. So he's taking it all the way to the Supreme Court.
Crazy.
Yeah. Just unbelievable. It's unbelievable because, you know, obviously he's claiming First Amendment, freedom of speech, and religious freedom, both First Amendment issues. And so does that trump this equality thing? Do you have to participate in somebody's wedding if they ask you to? It seems so bizarre, and we've talked about this a million times. Why would you want that? If you're a gay couple and a guy doesn't want to be a part of your wedding, why would you want him to be? Doesn't make any sense to me.
It doesn't. And they're sort of arguing this on the basis of he's an artist.
Yes.
With his bakery.
It means
a
lot.
It's an gallery of cakes, basically. Yes. And yeah. it's my artistic expression.
My dad, made cakes for a living. He was a baker. And
stunning development. No one could have guessed that. From looking at me.
And his specialty were wedding cakes. And he was an artist. He was absolutely an artist. It is an art form.
Mm-hmm. And that's what he says. And because they said, well, just because you make them a wedding cake, that doesn't mean you're participating in the wedding, so that doesn't constitute religious freedom. And then he brought in this artistic part of it, and so that's what the Supreme Court will hear tomorrow, whether or not he has the right to not participate in their wedding. And I'm guessing the Supreme Court's going to decide he has to participate in their wedding.
That's amazing. They're saying that this is basically
huge.
4-4.
That's huge.
Right? It's 4-4.
Yeah, it's 4-4 from the beginning. And then you've got Anthony Kennedy.
Yeah.
Who always decides on behalf of gay rights.
Although he has decided on the side of religious freedom a couple times as well.
And
not against
and
gay
Amendment.
Rights, right?
Yeah.
So
it'll be interesting to see which one wins out with him.
Yeah, interesting.
What are the ramifications of this? If the Supreme Court says, how far can they take this now?
It means, from what I understand, the legal world is saying that you will have to kiss men. At any point you request it.
No,
yeah, you cannot say you do not want to participate in that, because
I thought it was bigger than that. Thought we all had to be gay after this
all the time.
Yeah,
okay,
all the time.
I thought it was
are probably the wrong people to ask.
Probably true.
No, but I mean, if you're saying now that this is an art form, and it is, mm-hmm. and I'm spending my time, and I will make you anything, I just cannot make you something because of my religious belief. Mm-hmm. I can't put my hard-earned time and artwork towards your wedding. Well, then that's everything. That's everything.
Yeah,
you have no right to your religious freedom as practiced outside of the church. You have this is a really good move by FDR. You have the freedom to worship. You worship any way you want. In your church, worship any way you want. Once you're outside, no.
Yeah.
No. You can worship in your house. Mm-hmm. We can't even really do that now. But once you're outside, then that's different.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't really mean anything. If I can't apply what I believe, I mean, this is the problem honestly, this is why the Amish get away with it, okay? Because they mean it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're not playing some, we're also, pious, and then at night they're, whipping out their LED screens and watching movies. They're not doing it. We're Christians, we say one thing, but we live a different way. And so nobody, I don't believe you actually believe that stuff. We're the Amish, you're dressing like that. You're still in the barn shoveling crap. You've never seen a cell phone. I think you believe it.
Yeah,
I think you believe it.
Well, I mean, you'd think for sure you'd believe that the baker actually has convictions here. He's being offered money. It's the way he makes a living, right? And he's turning down money to make this stance.
And especially when he'll bake them anything else.
Yeah.
It's not like he's denying them service because they're gay. It's just that he doesn't want to participate in that particular ceremony.
See, here's the problem. We need each other. We need each other. And I don't want to live in a world where everybody is exactly the same. We need the pushback. It's the only way we grow. And as long as your pushback is not evil. If this guy was like, you get them gays out of my bakery, well, you're just a bigoted guy.
Mm-hmm.
But if you say, you're welcome here anytime, I love you, and you can have anything, I can't cross this line because of my belief. That's when we all need to say, okay. If I said, hey, I want you to come and participate in this particular thing. And for instance, I asked a rabbi to come speak at our church. Hey, would you come speak at his church? He says, no, I can't. I can't. Why? Rabbis are not allowed to walk into churches. You're just not allowed. You're a rabbi. You don't walk into a church. I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
Now, does that make him bigoted? No. It just means that's his religious belief, that we as a rabbi are not supposed to go into the houses of worship of other people's faith. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make him a bigot. I can live side by side with him. We're fine. That's just his belief. My belief is different. To force, would I want to live in a world where I could force the rabbi? No. I'm sorry, rabbi. You won't be able to practice any of your religious stuff unless you come right now and speak at my church. No, it's against my religious belief. I don't care. You're a bigot. I don't want to live in a world that is forcing him to go and break his religious belief. unless he's outside all the time going, you know, these Christians all need to be rounded up. No, thank you. That's a different thing. But we all have our religious belief, and no matter what it is, Penn Jillette, I don't agree with his belief in religion. He doesn't believe in it. He doesn't believe in God. I don't believe that. I don't want to shut him up. I don't want to change his lifestyle. I like him. He's a nice guy. He's not doing me any harm. Let him go. If he said, if I said, hey, I wanted you to come to, you know, my wedding. Now, he would, but let's just say he was one of these hardcore atheists. Like, I'm not going to church. Okay, cool. That's fine. I don't agree with it, but okay. Doesn't change me, doesn't change him. It's just he doesn't want to go to a church because he doesn't believe in God. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the question a lot of people have asked is, would a Jewish baker have to make a cake for a Nazi? Are we getting to that point where you're going to be forced into doing all of those things?
But see, what they'll say to you is, oh, come on. That's just not going to happen. No, that's not going to happen. Well, no, but you're setting the precedent that it has to happen.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying if it's not, because their defense is that a baker that supported same-sex marriage could refuse to make a cake opposing it, right? And that's obviously true. Their defense that as well. That's not a case of sexual discrimination, though. That's not a case of, that's just a political statement case. Like the Nazi, the Jewish Nazi thing, they could say.
Okay, so, all right. So Corrie Ten Boom, you know who she is. She actually, to save Jews, she's a Christian. She actually went to, what is it, Ravensbrück. And she and her sister died in Ravensbrück. And she went with the Jews to the concentration camps. A remarkable woman. She gets out and she goes on a tour of saying love and forgiveness. Now she's going all over Europe, love and forgiveness. We have to love the people that we think we despise, that hated us. Love, 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 love. That's the answer. So she goes into a church in Munich and she said she felt her real first big test. She goes into this church in Munich and she starts to give her speech on love and she looks down and she sees the guy that was in charge of the shower room when her and her sister came in. He was the main guard and was in charge of all of the mocking and all of the things. Can you imagine what happened in shower rooms? All of the things that the guards were doing in the shower rooms, he was the guy in charge and she was preaching love. And he comes up to her afterwards and he said, I am glad to know that there's forgiveness even for people like me. Thank you. And he puts his hand out and she said, I couldn't shake his hand. I couldn't. She said, everything in me, I could not do it. I couldn't. And she said, I immediately closed my eyes and started prayer. Lord, help me here because I have no love for this man. I cannot find a love. Help me. And she said, she opens her eyes and he's standing there and she's like, I could not. She said, it was like my arm was tied down. I could not move it. She said, I close my eyes again. Lord, help me here because I can't find the love for him. She said, I opened my eyes a second time. She said, my arms started going up. She said, when I grasped his hand, she said, that is when I just felt the power, God's power of giving me the love for him. She said, but I had to start moving my hand first. I have no idea why I'm telling you this story now, but I know it ties in to what we were talking about.
Wow. Okay.
That was awesome.
It's powerful.
Isn't that a Corrie Ten Boom say that? Is that a quote from her?
That's a quote. She was starting to lose it there at the end.
All right.
So I think the point is that this is who we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be able to, no matter what, we need each other. We got to love each other. But we don't have to force it down each other's throat. Otherwise, it does lead to the showers. That kind of stuff leads to the showers. One side says they're right. The other side says, no, I'm right. Whichever one has the power, if you don't agree to disagree, then you have to round people up. We got to love each other and recognize that we have to coexist.
It always ends with a bullet to the head. I think we've said that before, haven't we? That's where it always ends.
It always does.
It always ends. Yeah.
Okay, well, so we're looking forward to a really great court case tomorrow with a bullet into the head of the baker.
Also, a very upbeat Pat Gray Unleashed is certainly around the corner.
Pat, what are you leading with?
Oh,
okay. Entertaining version of what we just talked about. So that's coming up.
Not no Corey Ten Boom 12-minute.
No, sorry about
dissertation
that.
Dissertation on handshaking.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a little deeper than that, I suppose.
Little.
Listen to this quote from the real quick. If a retail bakery will offer a white 3-tiered cake to one customer, it has no constitutional right to refuse to sell the same cake to the next customer. Because he happens to be African American, Jewish, or gay. That's the Colorado Civil Rights Commission is making that argument, essentially saying it's the same thing. You can't refuse it to one and not the other. Now, I think the art line is important there, because if you are decorating with specific things, there's something there.
So here's the point I just remembered. It was on this. Would Corey Ten Boom, should she be required to make a wedding cake for that man's wedding? Should she be forced to participate in that man's wedding? Mm-hmm. The answer is no.
Of course not.
Should she, as a Christian, reach the hand of fellowship and say, I forgive you? Yes. But should she be forced, especially when the Germans were in charge? No. This holiday season, send more than a card to those you're not going to be able to spend time with. Send them something that shows them how you feel. Send them some Pro Flowers, a bouquet or festive plant from Pro Flowers. It's not the same old traditional gift. They have candy cane roses, a great option for the holiday gift. For a December birthday, anniversary, or for the holidays, because you just can't go. But if you're going for the holidays, get their classic mini Christmas tree. Comes with lights and ornaments. It's fantastic. No matter what you choose, you're going to get 20% off any Pro Flowers bouquet or plant of $29 or more just because you used my name, proflowers.com. Go to proflowers.com. Get 20% off all their bouquets of $29 or more this holiday season. Go to proflowers.com. Use the promo code Glenn at checkout. That's proflowers.com. Promo code Glenn.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So if you thought, I'll never see an election with a game show host, a socialist who's about 1,000 years old, and Randy Quaid, you may be mistaken. More on that on tomorrow's broadcast.
Glenn Beck.